film is regarding methamphetamine users and what their story is and how they came to using the drug and their challenges on becoming drug-free from methamphetamines and what's working for them and what doesn't, as well as interviewing and walking with frontline workers who are helping clean the city up of discarded needles or other drug paraphernalia that's been used with meth, other organizations that help with detox and long-term treatment facilities. The goal of the documentary was not to demonize anybody, to show that there's a human side to the methamphetamine crisis and tell the stories, basically.
How are you hoping that this use of personification gets through to people?
What we did was a little bit unique. Instead of looking at it an angle of, you know, there's drug users that need to be arrested and put in jail, or people that might be asking for money or whatnot in the streets, so they'll just use it for drugs, etc. We didn't look at our film from that angle. We're looking at more from an educational perspective. And the original goal of the film was to have it played in every high school in our province. And we had a commitment after being screened from our Manitoba School Boards Association to have this film played in every high school in our province. And what we did with the film is we broke it up into four chapters, keeping in mind that school classes or periods only go so long. So it gave an opportunity for teachers to show a chapter during a period where they could stop the film after a chapter and have an open discussion with students, or they could skip a chapter and pick one in specifically to discuss with the students. And we actually had this screened with a high school class a couple months ago. And at first I thought, my background being a paramedic, that they'd be asking questions about that and about methamphetamines. But the conversation turned to more, well, why is government not solving this problem? And what is it that we can do as kids to help out? Or what can we do when we're older to help out? So after that conversation, I thought, well, maybe there'd be a use for this beyond high school. And we moved it into a screening at a local university. And what we found was the faculty, along with some of the students, saw it as an opportunity to change their way of thinking on what they should do when it comes to social services or nursing or psychiatry. So we've had some great success in that area.
I noticed in the documentary some not so subtle prods at the government about kind of a lack of effort on their part. So was that intentional? What were you hoping to convey with that? And what are you maybe hoping that the government will do in the future?
Well, I was actually surprised by the response from government here. I told them about the documentary and what we were looking for, and nobody seemed to want to talk about the problem. In fact, there was an email put out here by one of our health authorities, specifically not talk to me, to not engage in conversation. So that was quite surprising. One of the things that our government's done here, and I'm not sure about in Oregon, but they've started a needle distribution campaign where they feel if they hand out clean needles, it would help curb some of the communicable diseases that are being spread by needles. And during our filming, we walked with the Bear Clan patrols in our inner city community that does walks nightly. And they found just tens of thousands of needles discarded in the street, which was quite shocking. So going forward with that, when they first started their campaign walking around, they only started out with a couple thousand here and there. But to date, for this year, they found 145,000 so far in the streets. So, but that was our government's solution to the meth problem, was to handle clean needles.
So that's in Canada, when that's where this documentary takes place and where everything was filmed, correct?
Right. And for the rest of North America, just through interviews, we found that regardless of where meth is being used, the only thing that was really changing was the faces and the names and the places. And as in Oregon, for example, from your local law enforcement, they've seen that now that meth overdoses are now outnumbering heroin overdoses, which was kind of a surprise to them, because right now much attention is put on the opiate overdose in Oregon or the United States in general, and meth is starting to make its comeback because it's become cheaper.
Yeah, I've definitely heard a lot more about the opioid crisis more than meth, and I'd never seen anything like this documentary before.
Well, one of the main problems, though, probably goes for a lot of addictions with illegal substances, is the answer seems to be arrest people, put them in jail. And the problem is once they're released from jail, they may have detoxed from whatever drug it might be. In this case, it's meth. The problem is they're put back into the same situation and to why they started using the drug. So in this film, it speaks to the type of treatment that's needed specifically for meth, where the regular detox that we normally see with alcohol as an example, where somebody might be detoxed for 12 days or 28-day program, they're finding that with the meth, that once they're released, even though they might be now free of the drug, they're going back into a lifestyle that did not change for them. One of the disturbing stats in our documentary is for youth use of methamphetamines, that 86% of the individuals were females. And in Canada, I couldn't interview the youths and put them on film, but just speaking to them off camera, one of the main reasons was either peer pressure or the females were subjected to sexual abuse in the home. So once they were off the drug from detox and they were put back in the home, their relapse rate is 95%. So one of the treatment offers that we have here is a two-year program where somebody will detox off a drug, but the treatment doesn't stop there like it would with any other drug. People could be placed into a long-term living facility up to 2 years where they would receive mental health help through counseling. They might have introduced some life skills on how to build resumes, changing who they're hanging out with, some more psychiatry, or just general medications that they may require for something else that's going on with them.
Going back to, you mentioned earlier how pretty much the only thing that changed from place to place with this issue was the names and faces. And I know that you're working on getting this film shown in more places in the U.S. as well. So are there any other ways that maybe Canada and the U.S. compare on this? Do you know of the differences in how the two countries or even some states are working to handle this?
Absolutely. I guess the problem is like provincial or state laws will differ from state to state or province to province based on the government in power at the time. They need to come up with a better solution than just imprisoning people or just detoxing them short term. What we're finding with the methamphetamines and other addictions, whether it's alcohol, gambling, heroin, is people are turning to these drugs for a specific reason. And that reason needs to be addressed. And one of the three reasons that we found that seem to be pretty consistent is people that are living in poverty, people that have mental health issues that haven't been addressed or they're struggling with. And the other one was homelessness. And until those three main things are addressed, there will always be a heavy relapse rate, at least with methamphetamines. And of course, addressing those issues is a very, very high price financially to pay. So it's coming up with the monies to deal with the problems. I know in Oregon right now for meth specifically, 68% of property crime, according to your law enforcement officials, is due to methamphetamine use. 88% of violent crimes is because of methamphetamine use. And the amount of money that it's costing everybody to deal just with that is pretty hefty. So meth, basically it affects everybody. My father comes from the days of lock them all up until they get clean. I said, well, you know, like, Dad, this it still affects you because once they're released, they're going to go back to the drug. And he insists that meth doesn't affect him personally until I explained to him that when you leave change in your car and it gets broken into, it's not kids breaking in at 3 a.m. to get changed to buy a Slurpee or a Slushie. They're breaking in for change for something as petty as $2. That would afford to buy them a point of meth that would get them high for 12 hours.
Why this specific topic? Why did you decide this documentary needs to be about this? What is your connection, your motivation for doing this?
Well, I've been a paramedic for 15 years, and I've seen a fair amount of my fair share of overdoses of patients, and I've never seen anything like methamphetamines. It's an insidious drug. It's not like an opioid where somebody would do the drug and they would overdose, and you would use a counteragent such as naloxone or Arcan to reverse the overdose. The meth, when overdoses happen, it's usually over a long period of time of use where they may be in a state of psychosis, or if they haven't used in a while is when they'll start to have symptoms, withdrawal symptoms that would cause an EMS response. And we don't have any medication that can counter a meth overdose. The only medications as paramedics, at least where I come from in Canada, was a antipsychotic we could deliver to them, or we would have to sedate them. So there was no counter agent that we could use to reverse what was happening to them at the time. So I'm coming near the end of my career as a paramedic, and I felt that I needed to do more. Meth in our community has crept up in the last 3 years, where it's overtaken any other drug use right now. We used to have the opiate scare, which still exists, but meth has become so cheap now that when you pay $2 or $10 for a point of meth and give you the same type of effect as cocaine would, we're finding that people are turning to that. And it's everywhere. It's very easily accessible. So that's why I decided to personally fund a film on the methamphetamine crisis as an awareness campaign.
So obviously you know a lot about this. You did the whole documentary and everything, but what did you learn from this process?
Being a paramedic, I'm responding to emergencies that require immediate attention, and I never get to find out the backstory as to why somebody was using methamphetamines or any drug for that matter. My objective was to make sure they made it to the hospital safe and alive. By filming this and speaking to users, I found that, you know, that there is a story behind it as to why they're using. And they're using for a variety of reasons. Unlike the 80s drug scare that most of us probably recall, the commercials, what a drug dealer should look like or what somebody uses should look like is completely wrong and fabricated. Two individuals that we filmed, one was a PhD student at a university, and another was actually a math and science teacher at a high school. And these are people you wouldn't expect that would be using methamphetamines, but they were. What I mentioned about the screening that we did at one of the local universities here, following the film, the dean came up to me and mentioned that two of the professors that they have on leave are currently meth users. So it can affect everybody. So that's what I learned, is they're people. They need to be treated like people, not criminals. Whether they have trauma-induced past or mental health issues or they're living in poverty, they're turning to the drug for a reason, and we have to start addressing those reasons. And that's the only solution.
And among some other things that you mentioned earlier, what are some other misconceptions that you want to let people know of?
One is, especially up here right now, people have this misconception that somebody using meth would be extremely violent. It's not always the case. It's a rare circumstance. And that seems to be the stuff that you only really see reported in the news. Somebody using meth, you may very well know now and not even have a clue that they're using. I know that math teacher that I was speaking about, our science teacher as well, while he was teaching, he made mention off camera that his students would ask him, you know, at the height of Breaking Bad, the TV show, with the making of the meth with the science teacher in that show, they were asking him, you know, Mr. So-and-so, you know, while this is a crazy show, can you teach us how to make meth in a joking manner? And it was so surreal to him because while he was teaching, he was actually high on methamphetamines and the students didn't have a clue. The only time people really find out is when they notice somebody's lifestyle is changing. With meth specific, they may alter their friends who they're hanging out with, or there's a severe lack of sleep. And sometimes it's not too late, or it gets too late to the point where they start going through psychosis. And even then, doesn't make them violent. Speaking to them helps a lot. So it's not people that are homeless that are just using meth. That's another misconception about homeless people. They're not all addicts. But it can affect everybody.
We've been speaking with Canadian film producer Rodney Bardner about the new documentary, Methamphetamine: Community Under Siege. More info about this documentary can be found at jezepjones.ca or on the Jezepe Jones Facebook page. With KBOO Evening News, I'm Melissa Hood.